Hi, and welcome to another edition of Amana Podcast. Amana is a collective of people, places, things, and actions that transcend us, living and exploring your higher virtues and what leads you there in your life and what takes you off course and how do you get back on. And today gives me great pleasure to introduce my friend, Dr. Mark Darrow. Say good day, Mark.
Hello there and good day, mate. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm so glad we get this opportunity to do this together. We have known each other for, I feel like I was a pup. But I was around 21, I think, when we first met. And the first thing I'd like to say out of the gate is just thank you for being my friend. You have always been a great supporter of me in my life in so many levels, and I can never be more grateful for your contribution towards that. And I wanted to kick off with our listeners. You're one of the most qualified people I've ever met in so many levels. So one, a medical doctor. Two, are you still an attorney?
It never goes away. It's like being an outlaw.
I remember you had your real estate license, some accounting qualification.
Masters of taxation.
There we go. What about a minister? A notary? Well, you're a notary republic. Where you, is it notary in this country?
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the day, we call it justice of peace in Australia.
Yeah.
Musician, athlete, father, husband. I mean, there's not much left.
Well, you know, our good handsome. Friend, I used to, our friend Jer said that this was going to be the lifetime of tying up all the loose ends, and I'd be doing many lifetimes within one to close it out.
It's pretty incredible what you've done, achieved, and you know, you're not just talented, but I know you work extremely hard at whatever you're focused on. And I mean, banjos too. I mean, there's just so many things. So let's kick off with the question of virtues. So you can either go professional or personal, or it could be a combination of. What do you care most about in this life, Mark, and how would you describe that?
It's really easy for me, Mark, because after having lived with our friend John Roger, there's not much more left out in this world, because the inner world gets so opened up and exposed that it's always the center of focus. And we all live in two different worlds at the same time. You know, we hear about the duality of Eastern philosophy. But in the world of that you and I live in, and those of us that have lived with John Roger, it's very clear that we vacillate back and forth between the deep inner and then the outer. And the virtue to me, the only virtue, is the facility to go back into the inner and find that place where spirit resides. Everything else is, it's just not even worth talking about. And people have all kinds of words, you know, joy, peace, love, blah, blah, blah. But it's all really the same thing. It's the experience of the inner spirit. And to me, there's no reason to focus anywhere else. And when you can focus there, and we have the facility for doing that. We've been gifted by John Roger, and I don't know if your listeners know who he is, and I can talk about that, or you can talk about it, or whatever.
Why don't you share a little bit about John Roger, and as his initials often called as JR, but I've shared with the listeners before, people have been on who have been connected with JR, but I'd love to hear your version or explanation.
Sure. First of all, there's a little issue that comes up when I talk about him. I usually break down crying. So just even talking right now with you, you know, it's starting, that thing is coming on me. So I apologize for that.
Apologies needed.
Yeah. So I'll probably go in and out of that as we have this discussion. I guess I should tell you my story initially of how it all happened.
Yes.
I'll try to, I mean, there's a book that I've been writing for the last 50 years about this, and it'll probably go on till the day that I expire because it's endless and it keeps opening up deeper and deeper. So I never want to publish the book.
Yeah.
Because there's no end to it. And new things keep happening to me. I never claim anything because I know it's all the spirit. Mm-hmm. And I'm just flashing. My God, I'm flashing on 50 or 60 or 100 different episodes with John Roger that have shown this to me. The one that stands out right now is I was leaving a medical practice building in Century City, where my first medical practice was with two partners, and the lease ran out. And I had a lunch plan with JR. The night before, I wrote out two legal pages of options of what I could do next. And so I sat down with him at lunch and I'm asking questions. And while I'm asking questions, I have a pen in my hand and I'm kind of stroking the pen back and forth while I'm talking to him. And I was in and out of the body. It was just so dramatic. I'd be floating up and then floating down and floating in and out. And he said, Mark, do you know how you get out of the body? And I said, no. And he said, give me that pen. And he took the pen and he showed me what I was doing. It was a tactile focus.
Hmm.
And anyway, so he was asking me what my next question was. And this was about where I would land for my next medical practice or what I was going to do.
Yes.
And you know this as well as all of us that have sat there with JR asking questions. Every time he answers a question, it's dumbfounding because it's so amazing. It has all the answers to the universe in that answer. But then the problem is that another question pops up. So I asked a page of questions, and then he'd give me an answer, and I'd be blown away. But then another question would come up. And then finally he said, okay, what's your next question? I said, I don't have any more questions. And he said, well, sure you do. I was the one who wrote them for you last night. I know all of them. And he says, why do you think you have no questions? And this was about, I'm trying to think what year, I lose track of time, but let's say it was 20 years ago. Okay. So I'd already been with him for 30 years.
Yeah.
And so I said something like, well, in all the 30 years I've been with you, I've had questions. And now these new questions have a different format, but they're always the same question I asked you from the beginning, 30 years ago. And he said, well, yeah. He said, did you think things were going to change? And I said, well, yeah. Isn't that what we're doing, evolving? And he goes, nope. He said, there is no such thing.
Yeah.
He said, it's all preordained and planned. And the experience of our evolution is fabricated, so you can have an experience here. So that was very awakening to me. But I diverted, and that's what I always do when I start talking about my experience, that there's just so many of them that I get lost in the nowness of who I am with the history. Because the history... Sorry, go ahead.
There's something really beautiful about that, Mark. You know, it's losing yourself, to me, is where the mind starts to get free and you just become kind of enamored with the energy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gone right now, Mark. So I'm digging for memories that are, you know, probably false anyway, because a memory is something that's an illusion. But how it all started was I always had out-of-body experiences from the time I was a little boy. And I never thought much of it. I just thought that's normal. I never mentioned it to anybody. Mm-hmm. And I would travel all through the universe looking for my home. And I'd come back to my little house with my parents, very sad, because I knew it wasn't my home. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't find my home when I was traveling. I'd be out in the stars looking, you know, through galaxies. And I couldn't find my home. Now I know it's inside of me, you know, but as a kid, I had no clue what it was. And that stopped in my teenage years, the out-of-body stuff stopped. And then I moved to Berkeley when I was 22 from Chicago, just on a whim. I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just driving west. I thought it was a whim. Jared told me it was later. It was actually him pulling me, you know, to do the work with him. But anyway, I was aimlessly driving, and I got to Berkeley, and it was home. It was home for that time. I felt very safe and comfortable, and I started having out-of-body experiences again. And I went to, it was fun for a while, but then I had one experience where I was walking down Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley, and I was up in the air about 15, 20 feet off the ground, and I couldn't get back into my physical body. Mm. And it took quite a while. I don't know what the time frame was, but finally landed back in the body. And I thought, I've got to do something about this because this doesn't feel right. This could be dangerous. So I went to the director I'm trying to think what it was, the dean of psychology at mm-hmm. Cal Berkeley. And I met with him and I told him what was happening with me. And I said, I need some help. Can you help me? Because it's getting out of hand. And he said, no, I don't know what to do. You're having self-induced hallucinations. Uh-huh. And I knew that was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was wrong that I couldn't be helped because I knew there was something there that could help me. Yeah. I didn't know what it was, but I felt very, very disappointed because I grew up in a family of doctors and lawyers, and there was always a cure for everything. Mm. So he opened the door for me to leave, and he shut the door, and I was on the outside. As the door closed, I felt like something cracked inside of me. And at that point, I was depressed, I was angry, and I was on the search. I knew there was something out there. I didn't know what it was going to be, but I knew there were some answers that I had no clue about. And then sometime thereafter, I was walking down Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley, and there was a bookstore there called Shambhala, which was a esoteric bookstore. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what that even meant. I was just walking by. There was a big picture window pane type of a wall of a, you know, instead of a wall, it was glass storefront. Mm-hmm. And there was what I'll call a mandala, a great big painting in a circle. And underneath it, it said, if you're going through something incredible or difficult or whatever, call me. And it had the guy's name and phone number. So I immediately took out a dime and went to the phone booth that was outside and made a call to a guy whose name I still recall. And this is 50 years ago, Howard Sass Portis.
Wow.
Turned out he was an astrologer, and that mandala I was looking at was a painted astrological chart. And back in that day, coming from science, if someone said the word astrology to me, I would have felt like throwing up because, you know, it's like, come on, you know, astrology is sham, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I drove my little Volkswagen Bug to find him right away. And I'm looking at different houses, and they're all little bungalows, beat up old bungalows in Berkeley. And I get to the address and I see Howard standing there in this big window. You know, all these little places have these windows as walls in the front. Mm-hmm. And there was, I mean, this was amazing. There were rainbows coming off of his head, all these beautiful colors. And I went, oh my God, here it goes again. So he opens up the door and I walk in, and he takes me by the hand and sits me down. He already had my chart. He had asked me on the phone about my birth data. Mm-hmm. And the guy knew everything about me, everything. And I left the reading. By the way, what he told me on the phone before I got to him was, he goes, hey, man, you got to come over right now. Your chakras are blown open. He said there's a pivotal point in this particular lifetime. I didn't know what any of that meant at the time. But anyway, I got to him and he explained what that was. And so I left. And at that point, I didn't know what to do other than I thought there'd be an anchor point in astrology. Because here's a guy that knew me, knew everything about me since I was a kid. And it was through his medium of astrology. So sometime soon thereafter, I was going through, I think it was called the Berkeley Barb. It was a throwaway paper with advertisements and articles. And in it was an article by Jim and Barbara Shear.
Yeah.
And they were starting an astrology class. So I went to their class, and it was at a, by the way, you can shut me up anytime because.
No, no, keep going. This is great.
Because my stories could take months of what this journey has been like. And, you know, being, as you know, being with Jared for one day is like months and months of experiences, mystical experiences. My path with JR was really very mystical. He yes. told me that, you know, from the beginning. And so I have a lot of stories, you know, about phenomena and stuff like that. I don't know if we need to get into it. But everything I tell you, I guess, has a lot of phenomena with it. So anyway, I walk into this place called Astrologos, which was an astrology commune. It was a very big, old, probably built around the turn of the century. Used to be what I'll call a whorehouse at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were about 10 bedrooms in there, and astrologers lived there. But anyway, I walk in, and they had a very, well, maybe you weren't there, but back in the day, the staff and Jerry used to come there to give seminars. That's right, you came in later.
Yeah, I was late.
So I walk in, and there's a giant dining room table that probably would hold, you know, this is from memory, I could be embellishing, but I'd say it could hold like 20 or 25 people.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle across from me was Jim and Barbara Shear, and no one else. No one showed up for the class, but I did. Hmm. And so they say, sit down. I pull the chair back, and I have a seat. And I know this is hard to believe, and I don't believe it either, but I do believe it now because my life has been like this ever since. My chair went upside down, and it went up to the ceiling. It was a very high ceiling, and I was hanging there upside down, swearing at them, what the F is going on here? And they were laughing so hard, and they said, they pointed to a picture of this guy with a chubby face and blonde straight hair on the mantle. And my chair came down and they said, that's him. That's John Roger. And I go, well, who is he? They said, he's our spiritual teacher, our guru. And they said, why don't you come on a Friday night when we play his taped seminars? He had the seminars that he did back in the day. It was typically all over the world, but in LA, it was every, I think, Wednesday and Thursday night when he was in town.
Mm.
And those were recorded. Phil Anthony, one of the staff guys, used to record those and send those around. And the staff girls, you know, Polly and Candy, I guess, would duplicate them at the time. I'm not sure how that all went. So I resisted that for quite some time. And I just kept saying, I'm not really interested in a guru, you know. I'm not into having a guru, you know. I had chased a lot of gurus in Berkeley. I'd mm-hmm. sat at the feet. This is like 1972 when I met JR. And I had previously had sat at the feet of many, many gurus who had come to Berkeley because I was looking for the answer.
You know what I mean?
You know, it's like, why am I having out-of-body experiences? Who am I? What's going on here? There's so much more than I can ever imagine, and I'm locked into something that doesn't make sense. You know, there's just, my life means nothing. Mm-hmm. There's so much more that I know is there, but I don't know how to get to it. So I chased the gurus and didn't find really anything there. So when Jim and Barbara said, come to one of these seminars and talk to our guru, I was like, for what? You know, gurus don't do it for me. So anyway, to me, Barbara Shear was a very beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she called me up one night and said, come on over. And those were the days of the open marriage. There was a book that came out called The Open Marriage, which was our Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that meant. It didn't matter if you were married or not married. Everybody in Berkeley was just very liberal with
freedom.
Their body. Freedom. Yeah. Yeah, sexual freedom movement. And so I thought Barbara was interested in you know, some intimacy. So I drove over and I get to Astrologos and I bang on the door and she opens it up and grabs me by the arm. Barbara was always very forceful with me. She was like my big sister in a way.
Hmm.
And we were best friends. And she drags me through this crowd of people. They're living room, they're a big living room, but it was wall to wall with people. And I was shocked. I didn't know what was going on. I thought it was going to be her and me. And she drags me through the crowd. And right in front of a chair, in front of the crowd, there was a little spot she had saved. And she pushed me down and she barked at me and said, "Sit down, you're going to be with him." And she pointed to JR, who was standing there. And I had no idea what was going on. I was pretty much in shock, to be honest with you. I didn't really want to be there. And I didn't really want to meet JR. And then his staff guys, you know, Edgar and Michael and Phil and Wes were there. And everybody looked very weird. They had their polyester clothes and, you know, the, what are those things called that come up to the neck?
Turtlenecks.
The turtlenecks and their hair slicked back, you know, with hairspray. And it just was weird. And then Jared sits down, you know, and I'm like, I don't know, 2-3 feet from him at his feet. And as soon as he opened his mouth to speak, here it goes.
Do it.
It was like a buzzing came over my body. And I didn't know what was going on. But he spoke for, I don't know how long, it was an hour, hour and a half. And I thought he was... I thought he was just talking to me. You know, I now know that he weaves everybody into the picture, so everybody thinks he's talking to just them. So he finished talking, and a big line of people got up in front of him, and I was kind of perplexed, like, is this what we do here? We line up? So I sat there for a second, and then I thought, well, I'll get in the line. So I got in the line and waited for quite some time while people spoke to him one at a time. And then when my time came to see him, he said very, very abruptly, "Stop doing breath of fire. You're burning out your chakras." And then turned his head away, wouldn't talk to me. Now, what he didn't know from anyone telling him was that I'd been doing Kundalini yoga, breath of fire.
Oh, right.
And so that was my first hit of realizing there was somebody who knew everything about me.
He could see.
Yeah. I was perplexed that he wouldn't talk to me.
Mm.
I understand now why it was, because I had other karma to go through, which was very difficult and probably wouldn't have even happened had I connected with him physically at that point. Mm-hmm. I would have just run to him immediately. So the weeks went by. He went back to LA or traveling, whatever. I was in Berkeley. And there was a gentleman who was part of MSIA at the time named Kalen Crawford, who has since deceased,
mm-hmm.
who used to meditate 10 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
So I thought, I'll go to his seminar. He knows what's up. Because I knew something good was going on, but I didn't like being around a group of people. I'm pretty much an introvert,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't like the idea of, quote, the movement. So I stayed away from the groups, and I went to Kalen's house for a seminar one night, and I was the only one that showed up. And I said, what is going on with all of this? Who is JR, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, Mark, JR is God. And I was like, yeah, I kind of got that, but how do I get into it? I said, I can't stand this group. And he says, well, guess what? You're going to have to stand the group, because that's what's around him.
Yeah.
And so he was one of the points that was important for me. And then there was a love affair I had with a woman who was in the movement. She taught me a lot more about what it was. And then there were groups of us that would drive down, to the seminars in Baldwin Park.
Uh-huh.
We'd load up a car and drive down and stay overnight for 2 seminars. It was at the Light Castle back then.
Sure.
So I get to my first seminar there, And the Light Castle was a place, it was like a little, you know, a communal setting where several of the old timers lived. And at the seminar, I was sitting in the back and I was looking at JR, and while he was speaking, a giant blue flame came out of his right ear all the way across the room. And I was sick at the time. And I kind of rubbed my eyes thinking, well, it's just, you know, my headache is bad, blah, blah, blah. I'm seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kept speaking. And at the end of the seminar, he blew that light, the same kind of a light, this big, wide flame across the other side of the room out of his left ear. And at that time, mm-hmm. he said, the mystical traveler has just shown a blue light to someone who's in the room, who's brand new, to let them know that the traveler is now working with them.
Yeah, wow.
And that night, one of the staff guys came up to me and said, Jer wants you to come over to his house to talk to you. So I drove over and we're sitting close to each other. And he said, so what do you think of the work I'm doing? And by the way, since the first time I met him, my life was drastically, drastically changing. Things were starting to clear. I'd been a terrible student. I was in law school at the time, but I never really went to class.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, everything was becoming important to me in terms of getting my act together. And I was having a lot of, you know, these little mini miracles. I was seeing these lights flashing. And he said, so what do you think of the work I'm doing? And I said, well, I'm just blown away by it. I said, I don't understand any of it, but, you know, it's amazing. I'm so happy and my life is changing. And he said, well, yeah, Mark, I see that, but there's something you don't like about it. And I was embarrassed. And I said, well, yeah, I don't like when you say the word Jesus. And he cracks up laughing. You know how Jared can laugh where he almost like falls on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of those. He was laughing so hard. And he said, Mark, you think you're Jewish? And I said, yeah, I'm Jewish. And he goes, you're not Jewish. And then he points to himself, you know, with the steel blue eyes and the blonde hair.
Yeah.
A Mormon dude. And he goes, I'm Jewish, pointing to himself. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, you're not Jewish. He said, you came in with Jewish genes to experience Jewish karma. And later, during a couple light studies, he explained the lifetimes that I was basically someone who murdered huge amounts of Jews in previous lifetimes, inquisiting, mm-hmm. you know, Spanish Inquisition, things like that.
Sure.
And the funny thing about it, when he told me the positions I held, I was like, well, that's cool. I was the leader of the blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until later that the pain and the karma of all that came out. So what happened then is through the months, and I was finishing law school, Jerry said that it was during a light study. He said, you're going to live on staff with me and the guys, and you're going to be my lawyer. So I was like so psyched. My God, I can't believe it. And, you know, when I heard that, I became like the best student on the planet. He said, as soon as you pass the bar, you're moving down here and you're going to live with me. And there's no words that could have ever made me happier in this lifetime.
Yeah.
So he said, you've got a little glitch in there. He said, you're going to flunk the bar the first time. And he said, karmically, you know, this is set up. And he said, but you'll pass it the second time because there'll be so much family pressure on you to do that, that you'll really study the second time. And then remember how he would kind of cock his eyes up when he'd leave the body?
Yeah.
Well, that happened. And then he said, wait a second. I have a way you can pass it the first time. He said, if you do what I tell you, you will pass it the first time. And he gave me a way of studying, which I'll share with you. I know you've had study issues in your life.
I have.
Maybe I have shared this with you. I don't know. But it's a good thing for everybody to listen to. He said, how many courses are there in law for the bar exam? And I think it was like 12.
Uh-huh.
And he said, get 12 legal pads and outline each legal book, outline 12 books, so that you don't have to ever look at the book again. You just have the legal pads. Because as you study and you learn one of these issues that you've written down, scratch it out so that your legal pads diminish. Then, before the bar exam, go into the studying with one legal pad of only things you don't understand or remember, and study that.
Yes.
Now, the other part of the story is he would wake me up. He was in L.A. I was in Berkeley. He would wake me up every morning at 5 a.m. swearing at me. I'm not going to use the language, but it was foul language of get your butt out of bed and get to the library when it opens. So it was the first time in my life that I'd ever really studied. I was the first guy at the library, and I was there until it closed every night. And I passed the bar. My friends, who were the good students, flunked because they thought they had it down. Now, how funny was this? Because you have to, after the bar exam, you wait about 4 months to get your results. And I knew I was going to flunk because I had no confidence. I never went to class. I just studied for the exams and barely got through. I'd cram.
Right.
So I go to the mailbox every day, and then finally the results showed up. I took the exam end of July. It was around Thanksgiving, and it was a big envelope. But I'd always heard if it's a big envelope, you flunked, because that meant that the application for taking it again
was the next one's in there.
So I never even opened up the envelope. I just kind of had my head down, and I sulked back to my apartment, and I handed it to my. She said, "Did you get your results?" I go, "Yeah." She goes, "How'd you do?" I said, "I flunked." And I handed her the envelope. And she opened it up and she said, "Mark, you passed." And I said, "No, I didn't. You are BSing me." And she said, "Mark, it says you passed." And I said, "They made a mistake." So I called up JR, told him, and he told me how that all happened and the karma behind it. And that was it. I was on the road. You know, I practiced law in Berkeley for a few months, and then he called me up and said, "It's time to move down." And he drove me around down here and showed me where my office was going to be and blah, blah, blah. And that was the beginning. And then at a certain point, he said, "Now it's time to move in." And so...
You're certainly a big part of setting up MSIA, the legal structures,
Well, that's a cool story, because back in Berkeley, you know, I opened up a law office there, a little storefront office with two guys who were a year ahead of me in school. And Jared called me up and he said, "I want you to take this organization that we're starting and make it legal," you know, which was MSIA.
Yes.
He said, "I have a lawyer in San Francisco, but he's old and he's going to pass soon." And he said, "I need a tough lawyer, and that's going to be you." He said, "I can tell people to knock it off, but if I do it, their body will die." He said, "So I need you to do it for me." And I cannot tell you how happy. I mean, it was the happiest thing that ever could happen to me. It went on for so long. That was sort of like the icing on the cake to draw me in, right?
Well, I was gonna say we're just coming to time, Mark, and when we could go on for a long time, and I appreciate it and happy to do more. But I'm coming back to my original question here, and it, you've made it so evident of what a value and really who John Roger is, and as the mystical traveler. Precept of consciousness. And for those who want to look up more, I'll put on the podcast notes. One way to find out a lot about JR is watching his biography that many were involved with, but particularly Jesu, who I've interviewed. So I think that will be a nice introduction. And you've shared so much here, Mark, around just your experience. And I hope people
in there between us. And it is
constantly. Whoa, there he goes. He just went off. You know, something I just did, Mark, that really has amazing for me. There's always new levels.
Yes.
And you're working with JR. It never ends. You think you're kind of at a place, and then all of a sudden it steps up to another level. And recently, Jay Sue just turned me on to TWI.
Yes.
And so I just subscribed to that. So what I used to do every morning while I was shaving and getting ready to shower was I would play the Hue meditation,
The Luxor.
The Luxor meditation, you know, the Hue meditation. I played that every day of my life for years and years and years and years. And then just about a week ago, my CD player stopped. It stopped working.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, what am I going to listen to? And I mentioned it to Jay Sue, and he said, why don't you sign up for this TWI, you know? So I signed up for that. And now I'm playing this thing on and off all day long.
That's great.
And it has totally moved me to another level of inner awareness, which for me is, you know, I have the option. You know, Jaron has said many times, if you want to see the face of God, you can't look at other things.
Mm.
You know, it's a choice. There's only so much bandwidth that you have. And of course, there's nothing wrong with anything you do. It's all choice. But if you want to have that inner experience, my suggestion from my experience is cut out the chafe. You know, go to the heart of what you really want.
Yeah.
And this is a great way to do it, to have that constant reminder. I mean, I have pictures of John Roger around me in my office, at my home. I have all kinds of little reminders. But this one is better than anything I have done so far, because there's videos. I can look at Jer. I know some people probably listen to think I'm just an incredible idiot. But I can tell you this. I'm pretty blissed out most of my life, and I'm still an extremely high-functioning business person.
No question about that.
I do the law for I have a big medical practice, a high-income medical practice. I do the marketing, you know, with the internet. I have a radio show. I have so many things going on. I have so many hats that I wear.
That's true.
But doing my work in the world, I'm always looking to JR for the right way to do it, because I can get off course very easily if I do it on my own. I'm just not that smart. A very cool thing is in my practice, people say, God, this isn't like a medical office. I don't even feel like I went to a doctor. You know, you've changed my life. And all I do is I'm a parrot for the traveler.
Yeah.
I don't know any of these things. You know, people say, how do you know this? I don't know anything. Or if they say, God, you know, you healed me. I go, I didn't do one thing. It's just something that is. And I don't want to claim anything, because I don't want to be responsible for anything. I don't know enough to know how to do that.
Well,
I just think
one of the hardest challenges, perhaps people who have been around JR, is to explain what it's like. And you've done a great job here, and I think the energy's come through as well. One thing that I was going to say, you know, with JR, he could personalize things. He would just know what was needed for each individual and or group. And when you were talking about you had these questions, I probably came to you with more questions as a younger man. But when I'd be around JR, there were no questions. I had no questions. And it would kind of frustrate me, because I had an active mind most of the time. But I used to drive him around and I wouldn't talk to him. We would drive for hours. I wouldn't talk because there was no questions. I think, Jesus, I'm with this guy that's probably got most of the answers that the universe could feed through, and there was just no questions. I already knew that all was good in the world.
That's right, because the thing is, when you're with JR, and that, I mean, JR's body is not here, but it didn't change.
Yeah.
he told me before he died that when he left the body, he would be with me more because he wouldn't have to take care of his body. And I totally experienced that. Yeah. And there are no questions in spirit.
Yeah.
And when you move into that place, I mean, I have questions when I'm not in that focus.
I have lots of them.
Yeah, I'm not going to kid you about it. But I meditate. I meditate an hour a day. And often I go in with a question.
Yes.
And by the time I'm done with the spiritual exercise, there's no question anymore. It's just be loving. It's always the answer. Be loving. Be loving. There's no other answer to any other question. It's just be loving. It takes care of itself because nothing in the outer world has a lot of significance. There are easy ways and hard ways to do the outer world. That's choices. And the easy way is by loving. And you know, the big question, people, I tell that to people and they go, well, how do you love?
Very well.
Very well. That means you put everything aside and just go to the loving.
Yeah.
And that's really what Jared teaches.
I think on that note, Mark, that sums up just, you know, the exploration of virtues here there it is, you know, and I come back to that place. I would consider, for me, unconditional loving is probably the highest frequency that I can, I don't know, tap into at times.
I have one more thing I want to say, please, before we leave. So let me grab this because it just flew away for a second. It's this. I have no relationship with anyone in the outer world. So all of the things that my outer personality get frustrated with or question do not exist when I go to the inner. And I realize that what I'm experiencing in the outer is a total illusion because it's only me going through all of this. I have one relationship, and that's with spirit. You know, my focus is with JR to get to spirit. But nothing really exists out here.
It's really something.
It's really something. It's the irony of our existence. And if you want to be happy, you always have the alternative, realizing it's you and you. It's not anything else. And if you want to be happy, change the you. If you're not happy, you can't change anybody else.
That's
the
truth.
You can't change the situation, but you sure change your attitude about it.
It's so
anyway, true. Bless you, Mark. I'm very, very happy with you doing these podcasts, and thank I see you. Your ministry is blossoming through this. And I listen to your words. I've listened to a few other of your podcasts. And I am just amazed by you, and I see the spirit coming through you so strong. And I'm very, very honored to know you, and I see a great ministry ahead with you. And you know, as your older brother, just keep on trucking. You know, that was the Berkeley statement. Just keep on trucking.
Yeah,
it's all there. You've got it.
Well, I appreciate it very much, and as these podcasts for me have been really easy because I just asked a couple of questions, and it goes, and here's another great one. So thank you so much.
God bless you, my friend. I love you so much.
God bless you. I love you. Bye for now.